A lot of love stories end in death. Romeo and Juliet does not end well. Antony and Cleopatra, not a happy ending. And this morning, in the Haftarah, in the Torah portion, Nadav and Avihu, who in some mysterious way, as they were trying to draw close to God, ended up being consumed by the fire that they had created in their attempt, presumably, to express love. And there is a special distinguishing mark about this story of Nadav and Avihu that is actually a thread which reaches through many stories of the Bible. And that is, it's not just that Nadav and Avihu met their end, but they did so at the moment of their triumph, at what we might think of as the consummation of their love. Because the Torah portion, Shmini, is about the ordination of Aaron and his sons as the high priest. So this is the pinnacle of their career. This is what they've been working towards. And it is exactly at the moment of triumph that tragedy strikes. And in fact, it's not only what happens in the Torah portion this morning. The same thing happens in the Haftarah. David is bringing the ark from its temporary resting place to what he hopes will be its permanent place. There is this great triumphal procession. It is a moment of triumph and culmination for Israel, and the oxen stumble, and Uzzah, poor guy, reaches out to touch the ark to save it, and he dies. And again, at the moment of triumph, there is a tragedy. And it doesn't even end there. David, even though frightened, continues with this triumphal procession. He comes into the city, he's dancing around the ark. His wife looks out of the window. She doesn't like the way he's comporting himself. After all, he is a king. He's supposed to have standing. And so she insults him, which leads to a lifelong estrangement between David and his wife. All of this suggests that there is this theme, that at the moment that everything is supposed to be going well, things are sure to go badly. By the way, David, after this, says to God, not just do I want to bring the ark to Jerusalem, but I want to build a house for the ark. I want to build a temple. What does God say to him? You don't get to build the temple. And when David's son Shlomo builds the temple, according to the rabbis, the day that Shlomo dedicated the temple, that King Solomon dedicated the temple, was the day that God decided that Jerusalem would be destroyed. Which seems a little overly pessimistic on the part of the rabbis, but not if you've been following this continual trend of, at the very moment of joy, there's going to be trouble. This, by the way, doesn't only exist in Jewish tradition. This is also a theme of literature, of art. I mean, if you remember the moment that Beowulf kills the dragon, Beowulf dies. He doesn't get to go into easy retirement, tell his kids about how years before he killed a dragon and have them look at him in disbelief, as kids are supposed to with their parents' and grandparents' stories of what they did in their youth. Instead, at that exact moment, success is as much of a test of relationships as failure. This past week, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of the birth of Samuel Beckett, the great English writer. And I was reminded, although I searched the obituaries, but I didn't find it in any of the obituaries, but I was reminded of the story of Beckett's marrying his long-time love, Suzanne. And gradually, she, who was also a writer, became more and more jealous of his success. And one day the phone rang, and she picked up the phone, and she had a brief conversation, and she put it down and turned to him and said, "What a catastrophe. He said, "What? What happened?" She said, "You won the Nobel Prize." By the way, the marriage did not survive, in case you were wondering. Love is entangled in pain. And we expect that it won't be. I mean, there are two categories of times when people, if something bad happens to someone, there are broadly two categories of time in which they say that it's unfair. When things have been going badly and something else bad happens, they say, "Mike, it's unfair, how much can I take?" And when things are going good, they say, "Things have been going so well, why should this happen now?" It's only when things aren't going either well or badly that something bad is okay. But most of the time, when things are going well, we are struck by the contrast. And we realize that, in fact, at the heart of every success, of every love, of every relationship, of every consummation, of every culmination, there is pain. And the way we symbolize it in our tradition is, what do you do at the very last moment that a bride and groom stand under the chuppah? You break the glass. And there are lots of explanations for why you break a glass, and I'm not going to go into them all now, but the clear burden of the explanation is that at a moment when there's joy and celebration and so on, you should remember, things aren't always so great. Something bad's going to happen. Don't be naive. B'makom rina sham tehei ra'ada, say the rabbis, with their usual wry sense of humor, or else painful sense of realism. In a place of joy, there should be some trembling. I read a beautiful explanation, in fact, from a professor at Bar-Ilan about breaking the glass at a wedding. She said, if it's true that breaking a glass represents something bad happening, why, as soon as you break a glass, does everybody say mazel tov? You shouldn't say mazel tov. Say mazel tov, then break a glass. But her answer is profound and revealing. She said, the reason that you say mazel tov is what you're celebrating is the reality that the love will overcome the pain. It will outlast the tragedy. That the breaking of glass is for a moment, but when the glass is broken, they're still married. And will be. That idea is very, very, very powerful in life and very central to our tradition. There is no unalloyed joy. There is no life without a mix. The Targum Sheni, an early translation of the Book of Esther, said that actually when King Solomon sat on his throne, behind his throne he had two statues. The statues were of Nadav and Avihu, so that he would remember them. And what happened the first time that people tried to draw too close, that a triumph can collapse into pain, and they are forever intertwined. I say this because it is natural to wish, as we talked about with the Birkat HaChodesh, with the monthly blessing, it is natural to wish for a perfect life. A life without estrangement, without pain, without suffering, without missteps, without mistakes, without regrets, without things that you've done that you can never take back. It is natural to want only good. It's just not good to have only good. You have to break a glass at a wedding. You have to have difficulty in the midst of triumph. When famously God says, after in the Torah, after Abraham dies, we are told that Berech Abraham Bakol, that God blessed Abraham with everything. The rabbis ask, what does that mean, he blessed him with everything? Poor Abraham. He had to fight wars. He had to kick one of his kids out of the house. He almost had to sacrifice his other child. He had difficulty with his wife. Abraham had a lot of tzuris. He had a lot of trouble. And then they say that's exactly why it says that God blessed him with everything. He blessed him with joy and with pain, with anguish and with celebration, with friendship, with loss and with love, with everything. And even though that isn't what we pray for, it is on some deep level what we should hope that we get. Everything. All that life has to offer. The pain that leads to growth, because without pain you don't grow. I remember once years ago, they asked me from the Jewish Alcoholics Anonymous, asked me to come to a meeting and give a little opening Dvar Torah, a little opening word. So I went there and I gave a little word and they said, and then you'll sit and you'll be quiet and you'll listen. And the implication was, and you'll learn something. And they were right. And the first man who spoke said, I started drinking when I was 18. I stopped drinking when I was 35. And when I stopped drinking, I had the emotional maturity of an 18-year-old, because between 18 and 35, I suffered no pain. And if you don't have pain, you don't have growth. That's why Solomon kept Nadav and Avihu close. Because he didn't only want to represent goodness and triumph. There's no experience of life that doesn't have the potential to edify, to uplift, to instruct, to move us forward. The question isn't the pain. The question is what we do with it. What do you do with the wounds that are inevitable in love? Closeness can burn, but it can also warm. And every experience has both sides. When Abraham and Sarah were older, according to the rabbis, they did what many ancients did in a time before you had a large and interconnected economy. They minted their own coins. And the coin that they chose showed a young man and woman on one side and an old man and woman on the other. In other words, people who hadn't learned the lesson and hadn't lived, and then people who had. Berech Avraham Bakol. That's what we pray to be blessed with. Everything. All the difficulty, the reconciliation, the estrangement, the embrace, all the goods of life. And that's why, when we raise our glass, we don't raise it to goodness. We don't raise it to a painless and easy existence. We raise it l'chaim, to life, for all of its messiness, all of its pain, all of its illness, all of its healing, all of its hurt, and all of its love. May we all be blessed bakol. May we all be blessed with everything. And from everything, may we learn to love. Shabbat shalom.